Accession number 30,001, Mr. Peter Hurst, Reel 9. Now, we're now coming on to the German assault, you know, May the 10th, I think. What was the first sign? You'd seen these, you know, increased German air activity. Had you realised that an offensive was coming? I mean, they'd withdrawn you to France briefly.
No.
I mean, did you see it coming?
No, we had no idea it was coming. There was increased air activity over our area because we were the most forward squadron, RAF squadron, in that part of the world. And it was on the 10th of May 1940 that some bombers came over and bombed our airfield. And they damaged a few aircraft.
Now, what happened during that air raid? Were you there? What happened?
I wasn't on the airfield at the time, no. They came over very early in the morning. And, of course, we always kept our aircraft dispersed around the perimeter of the airfield. They weren't all together in groups. So that, if bombs or bullets were firing, you know, they spread out, so they'd have a more difficult job to hit them. Anyway,
did they do much damage?
No, not a lot. They then made a couple of craters in the airfield, which they soon filled in. But then our CO, it wasn't Knox. Knox had been replaced by this time.
Ah, well, let's talk about it briefly about your new CO. Who's your new CO?
Chapman Moore, M-O-R-E. He was always known as Hank. Hank Moore.
What was he like?
Oh, he was a good chap.
When did you take him over?
Sometime in April, late April.
Was he more competent than
yes, yes.
In what ways?
Yes. He was a more active... He seemed to have a more active mind. And he was, I think... and more active in the air. He was a good chap. He was killed eventually when he became a group captain out in the Far East.
So he was your new leader. Now, what did he... You're saying he decided... I mean, well, somebody decided. What happened? Because, you know...
Well, he got on to headquarters at Rams and said, we've been badly bombed this morning. And they said, well, this is... We now know that this has been the start of the German offensive, because they're coming from all directions, so you better come straight back with the squadron, bring all the aircraft, and come to Rance, which is where we went previously.
This time, actually, that's Etchemines, is it? That's the name of the... It says...
Rance Champagne. Champagne. Rance Champagne, they called it.
Right, okay. It says squadron stayed at Etchemines. No, okay.
No.
So it's just to Rance, as far as you're concerned.
Yeah, Rance, yes. And we stayed there.
Now, do you remember the move? Because you were ill, weren't you?
Yes, yes.
And what were you ill with? It doesn't say. But...
Oh, well, I had a stomach bug, which had absolutely got hold of me. And I had all those shits and everything. Terrible. I must have eaten something or whatever, I don't know.
So you were pretty out of it. So you didn't fly, I presume?
No, I tell you, there was another chap named... Another Kane, by the way. And named Bill Kane. He's also a New Zealander. He was a flight lieutenant. And I think Cobber Kane and Bill Kane was probably distantly related. So Bill Kane and I were given the job of making sure that all the aircraft got off all right. And then we had to attend to all the ground troops, make sure that they got all packed up all right, and got on their way to Rance.
And did everything go all right? Was there a...
Second? Yes. Yes, it went pretty well, really. and they went off in a convoy.
And they actually left on the 10th, then?
Yes, later on that day.
So what happened when you got back to Reims?
Well, we're set up there, and but Bill Kane and I had to go to one or two other places en route.
Now, the book says Derek Kane, but that's just
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah, his name was Derek. His real name was Derek. Well, we always called him Bill.
Right, got you right, okay. That's
yeah.
Confusing.
Yes, he was, Derek.
Right. And so what happened next then?
Well, then we went to Reims. We got there eventually. We didn't get there until the next day. And we hadn't been there a couple of days or so, and the CEO said to us, he said, now, you two, since you've got the car, we had a small van thing, he said, what I want you to do is to go down to, this is where Etchemin comes in, I think, go down there and see if you have a look for another airfield, see if there's another airfield we can go to. We can get away from Reims, because they're obviously going to make Reims a target, because a lot of aircraft there near the town of Reims, and it had hangars and fairly presentable targets. They said, the quicker we get away from this, the better. So we went and had a look, and we found an airfield. It was at Troyes. And I think that this was, they called it Etchemin, I think. This was it.
There seems to be some confusion about that in the book, but it doesn't matter to us. It's Troyes, anyway.
Yeah. So, we found this airfield, and we thought this would do, so we then screamed back in our vehicle to the squadron and said, we've got an airfield, and then while we were down there, we had a sergeant who was a French interpreter, by the way, so he was able to talk to the French people locally. He was with us.
I presume he was finding billets, really?
He was, yes. But we used him in various requirements where we had needed an interpreter.
Now, at some point in this period, Cobber Kane, was killed. Now,
not until into June.
Right, okay. There's some confusion in this.
I think it was the 4th of June he was killed.
Right, okay. So what happens next then?
Well,
we found this new airfield,
and the squadron moved there. Well, then, about a few days after that, the UK sent out quite a big batch of new pilots, because the old-timers, who'd been in France from the beginning, had done quite a lot of operational flying all over, from Roof and so on, and various other places, and they decided that we ought to be sent home, and that the new chaps would take over. And this was right at the end of May.
So had you been flying at all, or were you still ill with this diarrhea?
I was down for about a week or so, about that.
So you were picked to go back?
Along with several others, yes. I can't remember now how many.
And that was for a training role? It was always intended you were going to go back in a training role?
Well, no, we didn't know that at the time. No, we had no idea what we were going to do.
But it was at the end of your tour, then?
Yes, yeah. The new chaps arrived, and bit by bit they took over, and we all then packed up our gear, about seven or eight of us, I suppose, all together, and had to make for UK.
Now, you went by Paris, I noticed.
Yes. Well, we wanted to get to Cherbourg, you see, to get on a boat there, because Dunkirk had just started, and we couldn't go in that direction, take the shortcut across. We had to go down to Cherbourg and get a boat into Southampton.
Now, was it? It seems to be quite a party in Paris from the looks of reading between the lines. Do you remember it at all?
Yes. We did have quite a party there. Well, I remember one or two quite nice-looking girls around.
And then back to Cherbourg.
And back to Cherbourg. But we more or less had to make our own way because there were no train services. We got a train from Troyes to Paris. That was all right. They were running. When we got to Paris, there were no trains up to Cherbourg. Oh, God, how are we going to get up there? So we decided to make our own way and try and hitch lift. We thought if we stay together as a big group, or as a group, we'll never get anyone to take us. So we split up. And I managed to get hold of an old lorry, a potato lorry. I can't remember how I got hold of him now. Anyway, I said, are you going to Cherbourg or in that? He said, I am going to Cherbourg. I said, can I come with you? He said, yes, but you can't come in the front with me because I've got the front full up with all sorts of stuff. I said, you can sit in the back if you like. I said, all right. And when we got on the roads were jam-packed solid with refugees.
And what state were the refugees in?
Oh, they were, a lot of them had motor cars. They couldn't use the motor because they hadn't got any petrol. And a lot of them were towing their cars with horses. And on top, they had mattresses on top of the roof to give them protection against guns, air to ground, and also gave them somewhere to sleep if they pulled in for the night somewhere. And there's all these cars being towed by horses because they hadn't got any petrol. And mile after mile, nose to tail they were. So it took a long time, and they're only narrow roads, you know. There weren't anything like main roads, and it took a long time to get that journey to Cherbourg, because it was quite a distance.
And were you attacked at all during it? I mean,
no, we weren't.
Now, what about the evacuation at Cherbourg? How did you get on board a ship?
Well, they always had an army. They called him an RTO, a railway transport officer. And they had the army usually filled those jobs. And we got to Cherbourg, and we did meet up again. Somehow or other, we all got there in a similar sort of fashion to me, you know, any way you could. And we reported to the railway transport officer and told them that we were on our way back. We'd been relieved, and there were seven or eight of us all together, but coming through in dribs and drabs. And so he said, well, you can go on the next boat out. And the next boat out, this was in the morning, the next boat out was, because I'd travelled overnight in this vehicle, I was going out in the afternoon.
Do you know the date?
I can't remember the date.
Early June.
It was...
Or very late May.
Very late May. I think it was about the 30th or 31st of May.
How did you get on board? Was it? I mean, it was meant to be the last ship out, but that said a lot. But I mean,
oh well, you know, it was into the docks, and we just went up the gangway and went on board.
Was it crowded?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Anyway, we went off, and we travelled overnight, and we got into Southampton early in the morning.
Anything about the journey, or was?
The journey was okay. We didn't get attacked, although, you see, I think most of the aircraft and ships and things which were in action were all in action at Dunkirk. They weren't coming in our direction, thank God.
Now, the rest of the squadron was still in France?
most of the pilots had gone, apart from one or two. Cobber Kane didn't go with us. He waited for another couple of days. And while he was there, he didn't do any more flying operationally. There was an old Hurricane One then. He said, "Oh, I'm going to have a last flight before I go back," because he was due to go back later that day. I think it was the 4th of June. And he took off and, doing some low-level aerobatics, came too low and hit the bloody ground. Went in.
Was he stunting or you know, was he doing anything in particular?
Well,
I know
I wasn't,
you weren't there, but no. You know a lot of people who were there.
Oh,
you?
I think he was showing off.
Do you know what manoeuvre he was doing?
A roll. A low-level roll.
Because they were banned, weren't they, after that?
Well, at that height, yes.
Well, I mean, did you used to do things like that, or was it considered dangerous?
Well, it was bloody stupid. It was not only dangerous, it was bloody stupid. I mean, I used to do aerobatics in the Hurricane, but, you know, at a reasonable altitude.
So it's not the question of what he was doing, it's at the height he was doing it at.
Yes, yes.
Was he known for doing that?
A little bit, because he used to do low beat-ups. But I've never known him to do a low, slow roll before. He used to come in very low across the ground. And
now, that's just flying low.
Yes.
And basically, you know, scaring yeah. people by being so low.
Yeah.
But it's not attempting any manoeuvre, is it?
No.
Whereas no. this no. is an
So I suppose he thought it was his final fling, and he would have a final show. Anyway, it didn't come off.
Were you sorry about that? I mean, had he been a particular friend of yours by the end?
Yes, he had been. He'd been my section leader. You see, he was in my flight. Ian Schooler was my flight commander, and Cobber Kane. There was always a deputy flight commander who was also a section leader.
And section would be a three.
Yeah, and he was my section leader. I went with him on many. Many occasions when we were doing the patrols.
Did anybody else do these sort of low-level stunts? Or is this just a one-off?
It was a one-off. No, I don't remember anyone else doing anything stupid like that.
So what happened when you got to England?
Well, we got off the boat and we got on the train. I always remember it was a Saturday, a lovely day. Got on the train to Waterloo, and we were all a bit knackered because we hadn't had much sleep. But anyway, and it was by the time we got on the train, it was about early afternoon, and we going through Hampshire and so on, and there on we saw people playing cricket. In there, all in their whites and things like that, and we could hardly believe it after sort of going short on food and short on everything, pretty much, as we were coming out of France and seeing all the refugees lined up mile after mile, and there was two or three times on the way up we saw cricket taking place. All relaxed in there. You know what cricket is. And we could hardly believe it. Anyway, we got to Waterloo. And I said, well, you better go to your own homes. And then they told us they didn't know what to do with us. About four of us. So they said, you better go to your stations where you were before you went to France. So this was on a Saturday. We said, get up there on Monday. So he said, all right. They gave us railway warrants, so we didn't have to pay anything, of course. We got up to Digby on Monday and got into the mess. And then the station commander came to see us. Can't remember his name, who he was. He said, well, he said, we don't know what to do with you, but so what I think I better do is to contact 12 Group, which is at Hucknall, and was the fighter group responsible for the Midlands area, and the AOC of 12 Group was a chap named Lee Malloy. And he rang the AOC commanding. He said, we've got four chaps here, ex-73 squadron boys, who have got it staying in the mess. They're all told to come back here because no one knew where to send them. He said, well, all right, tell them to stay there. He said, well, I'll come over tomorrow and see them. I want to talk to them about what happened and so on, and how they were able to cope. And so he said, have you got somewhere where you can go? So the CO said, yes, you can use the ladies' room. So we all went into the ladies' room with four of us there, and the Lee Manroy arrived with his PA, and he was with us for about an hour and a half, I should think.
What did you tell him?
Well, he wanted to know what had happened in France and how we'd coped and so on. And we told him, you know, before the blitz started on the 10th of May, we were pretty busy, but after the 10th of May, it all went a bit haywire. And squadrons were going in various directions.
Because you didn't do any flying after that, did you?
No.
Did it? And it sounds like not many people did from your squadron.
No, they didn't.
So it all rather fell apart.
Yes.
When, in that way.
Yes, and then the new pilots came out. I don't know how they reorganised themselves. I've no idea.
That was probably bad timing for the changeover of pilots.
Yes, I think it was really. Anyway, the
what impression did Lee Mallory make on you? Because he's quite a controversial figure.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he was all right. He was pretty decent to us. But then he said, well, he said, I suppose you want some leave. So he said, yes, please, sir. Thinking we're going to get 14 days. He said, right, I'll give you 4 days. I thought, oh, God. After being through rough times like we've been. So he said, I want you back early because we're starting up some new units called operational training units within the fighter world. And we've got two at the moment, one at King's Lynn, flying Hurricanes, and one at Aston Down, also flying Hurricanes. But we're going to start up a new one within the next month or so, and that's going to be at a place called Harden, and we're going to have Spitfires there. So, to start with, all us 73 squadron chaps, we went to Sutton Bridge. Number one squadron chaps, who also came back about the same time as us, they went to Aston Down in Gloucestershire.
Now, anything before we go, anything about your leave? I mean, do you see what I mean? You know, when you got back, you had this 4 days leave, or
yes,
you just went home, I presume.
Oh, I went home, yes, to Westcliff-on-Sea.
Any after effects from your experiences, or were you fine?
No, I was okay. I'd got rid of my bug by that time, so I was okay.
Did they make much of a fuss of you on your return? I mean, you had shot down two or three aircraft.
Yes, oh yes, you know, people wanted to know all about it and what we'd done and what was happening, and tried to give them as accurate a report as possible.
Now you were going to Sutton Bridge, which is now that's number six.
Yes.
Operational.
Number six. Aston Down was number five. Sutton Bridge was number six. And then the new one, which they started up, I was the one in Norfolk, was that?
Sutton Bridge.
Sutton Bridge. I was at Sutton Bridge, I think, for about 3 or 4 weeks. I can't remember now.
Now, what was your first impression when you got there? I know it wasn't long, but, you know, it was your first time with...
Well, I'd never been in that part of the world before. And it was near King's Lynn.
And is it Lincolnshire? I think it is.
No, Norfolk, I think it was. It may be Lincolnshire now, but I think it was Norfolk then.
We'll check it. So what were you doing there? I mean, there weren't any Spitfires there, were there?
No, Hurricanes. But we were teaching people formation flying, operational type formation flying, and then they were doing attacks, and they're also firing their guns on targets in the sea. So gradually getting used to flying a Hurricane after having come off the Flying Training Command aircraft, which might have been Harvard's, might have been Hawk Arts, I don't know, it just depends what they were on.
You were training. What was your actual role in training? I mean, would you demonstrate things or lecture or what would you do?
No, we didn't do any lecturing. We'd do the flying side of it. They had ground studies for them arranged, but we did the flying. We taught them close formation flying, operational.
So you'd be part of the formation teaching them and go through it with them before they went up and then when they got down.
Yeah, you'd have a briefing before you went up, say, look, this is what we're going to do, and you do this and do that. And by leading them, and when you were airborne, you had radio contact, say, right, get a bit closer, number two, or get further out, number three, or and then say, do some turns and do some, then do some practice attacks, you know, tail chases. And that's more or less.
Have you been trained to be an instructor at all?
Nope.
So you were just learning it as you were going.
Yes.
And one thing is, you managed to fly the Gloucester Gladiator while you were there.
Yes.
That's quite interesting, because I don't think we've interviewed many people who ever had a chance. What was it like?
No, I only flew it once. It was there, and it came into our flight. I said, can I fly this thing? So they said, yes, if you want to. And I'd never flown anything quite like the Gladiator before. It was a powerful aircraft, really, and took off very quickly. You know, I'd never flown an aircraft which took off in such a short run. And with a biplane, of course, got extra lift. And then I flew around, I think I was airborne for about 3/4 of an hour, and got the feel of the aircraft and came back in. That's the one and only time I've ever flown.
Was it fast, or how did it compare for speed?
No, it wasn't as fast as a Hurricane, no.
What about agility in the air?
Very manoeuvrable. Very manoeuvrable.
But not as good as a Hurricane, then?
No. As a war weapon, no. Wasn't.
But interesting to fly.
Very.